We need a real investigation. I don't think we have one yet.
Yes, it's true. And yes, it is a crime.
Well, thank you, Cleta Mitchell. Thank you for that explanation. Really interesting and kind of appalling.
Thank you,
really.
Tucker.
Cleta Mitchell is somebody with great courage, and she's involved with your litigation and lawsuits and all of this stuff. She literally gave up her whole practice not to get paid. She saw how corrupt it was, how disgusting it was, how dirty it was. And I want to thank you on behalf of everybody in this room and everybody in this country. You are a hell of a lawyer and tough. And that's what we need.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Who's Counting? This is the podcast of the Election Integrity Network, sponsored by the Conservative Partnership Institute. And it's about all things elections, how elections are supposed to work, how sometimes they don't work the way they're supposed to, and what we as citizens can do to ensure that our elections are run according to the rule of law. And I'm very honored today to have as our guest, Jim Womack from Lee County, North Carolina. Jim is the president of the North Carolina Election Integrity Team, Insight. And we're going to talk about election integrity in North Carolina. So welcome, Jim.
Thank you. My honor to be here.
We're so honored that you would join us. And before we start talking about Insight, I'd like you to tell us a little bit about your background. I think our audience would be interested to know about you. I know you're a West Point grad. And so talk to us about your where you're from and about your Army career and how you got into politics.
Well, sure. Okay, so I was born in 1955. And my dad said, you have your choice of colleges, whichever academy you want to go to. I said, so I picked West Point, USMA. And we went there, graduated with Mack Warner from West Virginia, the Secretary of State, in 1977. Spent 20 years in combat arms of the U.S. Army. I was a cavalry officer and did combat duty in Desert Storm. Served at the Pentagon for 3 or 4 years. Learned a lot about how the federal government works and doesn't work.
Right.
And then subsequent to that, I retired in 97 and went to work in a private sector IT company. Actually, initially worked with state government in Washington and North Carolina, then went to work in IT as an architect, an engineer, and a sales executive. And I engineered, one of my accomplishments was engineering the statewide health information system for North Carolina.
Really?
One of the public health systems, yes. So that's really the sum total of my professional career. I was a county commissioner in Lee County from 2010 to 2014. Learned a lot about the election business going through that experience, and some of it's really stuck with me over the years. It helps motivate me to want to be more involved in election integrity. 4 years as a county commissioner, and then became the chairman of the Lee County Republican Party, where I've continued to serve in a volunteer basis, and I've served in a number of nonprofits. I head up the Conservative Coalition of North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Which has got 33,000 followers.
Oh, my gracious.
Very good compendium of activist groups all over the state. And I chair the State Oil and Gas Commission.
Oh, do you?
Appointed by Senator Berger to chair that commission back in 2012 when it looked like that North Carolina was going to get in the fracking business. We wrote the rules, got those implemented, and I still chair the commission now 10 years later and am about to in my tour of duty in oil and gas business. I've been a regulator for 10 years, and now it's time for someone else to take up the torch. Mm-hmm. But that's it.
Well, that's a pretty good resume. That's a lot of years packed into a very short period of time, so thanks for sharing all that with
us. Yes, ma'am.
So talk to us about Insight and the North Carolina Election Integrity Team.
Okay, well, we have our inspiration sitting right next to me here. I was convinced to attend a summit in Washington, D.C., January 4th and 5th of this year. And I had an interest in election integrity because I witnessed firsthand, when I ran for county commissioner, I witnessed firsthand how people can cheat. And at the time, I thought it was just an annoyance. I didn't really have the perspective that I have now about wide-scale, large-scale, nationally recognized voter fraud, voter election fraud, bad procedures, incompetence, you name it. So at the end of the summit in January of this year, I was motivated to go ahead and pull together a team in North Carolina. So I got with Jay DeLancey, who's the head of Voter Integrity Project, and several other activist groups. And we compared notes and decided to organize our own summit of sorts in February. And that was really more of an organizational and planning meeting. we identified roles and responsibilities, and then from there we took your model, your citizen's guide, and implemented what we refer to as the 8 lanes of election integrity. And we've been organizing since then, doing training and outfitting the volunteers from all over the state of North Carolina to do their roles, mostly with focus on poll observing. But as we're branching out now into the other 7 lanes, we're starting to do a lot more training and orientation with the boards of election, with absentee by mail, list maintenance, those other lanes. So we've been very busy since January, since your summit. We have not rested from that moment going forward.
I know you're my, I mean, I point to North Carolina and I say to everybody, be like North Carolina, be like Jim Womack.
Well, have better lists than we've got. I can tell you that. You better voter lists.
You know, well, let's start, because I want to talk through some of these lanes, because you have expertise in so many of them that, you know, that, and I know that people in various states are working on things like, people have realized how bad the voter rolls are in their states, and they all think it's just in their state. But the fact is, they're rotten everywhere. But talk about what you have learned about the voter rolls in North Carolina, some of the problems that you see.
Yeah, well, I'm always a student of what others can teach. And one of the things I learned early on from doing walk plans and going and knocking doors as a candidate, that the voter rolls are not very accurate. Running into people, I said, do you know this person? And no, I don't know. That person hasn't lived here in 12 years or 14 years. You know, you find this out. Campaigning for Dan Bishop down in Union County back in 2019. And when I was down there knocking doors, I say, oh, I remember that person. He was here like 3 years ago, and there's been 2 people who've lived in this house since then. You know, and the voter rolls, you know, they don't change that often. And there's a lot of it's just a lack of interest on the part of the election boards around the country to want to remove people from the rolls for fear of suppressing or preventing someone from being able to vote. Federal law kind of promotes keeping people on the list if there's any doubt whatsoever about their legitimacy. That's a problem. And I think it's compounded by the fact that the left, and we're the amorphous left, the people
the ubiquitous left, they are everywhere. Right.
They don't want anything that would compromise a potential voter, or I should say a potential vote that they can count.
And so whether there's a voter to go along with
right.
that voter,
it doesn't really matter whether it's a legitimate voter or not. It's a potential vote that they can count, and they work hard for that. I give them credit. They really work hard for those votes, and I think there's a reticence on the part of election boards all over the country to want to tighten up the rules and regulations. And then I would say that the general assemblies in every state, most every state, are very similar to what we have in North Carolina, and that is they're interested people. But you know, I tell everybody when they ask why don't they want to tighten up the voter rolls, I said, well, they got elected.
Right.
You know, it's a mentality. I got elected. If I mess with the voter rolls, you know, it could compromise my ability to get reelected. So people need to be mindful of that. They're motivated as well to have free and fair elections, but they don't want to mess with any, they don't want any unintended consequences right. coming out of cleaning up voter rolls.
Well, you know, one of the things that I've begun to realize as I've been doing this for the last year and a half is that the left's language, it's Orwellian. When they say, I was just reading a resolution this past week that was passed by the National Association of Secretaries of State at their annual meeting, I want to say in 2017. The title of the resolution is NASS encourages federal government to assist states with list maintenance. That's the title. Then when you read it, it is everything but list maintenance. There are things that the federal government should do. It should change the National Voter Registration Act. I think that's one of the things that's on my list to talk to members of Congress about, to get the NVRA updated, because right. it's a mess and it keeps states from doing what they ought to do to clean up the voter rolls. But when they talk about list maintenance, they're not talking about requiring, for instance, the Department of Homeland Security to make its list of citizens and non-citizens available to the states for free, which they don't do now. They charge them an arm and a leg. And so most states don't take advantage of it. It's a very cumbersome process to try to get that list of non-citizens. And then The Social Security Administration. The federal government could make that list available to states for free. They've got the death list. You know, the Social Security Administration seems to know within moments after somebody dies. But that costs an arm and a leg. But those are a couple of things that federal government could do that would assist. Do you think that resolution called for either of those? No. You know what it asked for? NASS asked that federal agencies turn over lists of recipients of benefits and services to the states so the states could send things to them to make them register to vote.
Right.
When they talk about list maintenance, they are not talking about cleaning voter rolls. They're talking about how can we add more and more and more names to the voter rolls.
Yeah, it's a very good point. And you know, we've had some conversations about the ERIC interstate
I think it's election registration information
right.
counselor.
Well, the whole idea of ERIC was to be able to share the voter lists so that you could have, and particularly voter history, so that you could identify if people were exchanging information. But that wasn't really the motivation, I think, of creating ERIC, and it's certainly not the consequence of it being created. You're not getting a lot out of ERIC at this point, and I'm not sure that it serves the purpose. I'm familiar with a lot of the other enterprise class information mm-hmm. systems, and child support enforcement is one that's really interesting. If you're an absent parent, if you're not the custodial parent, and you move anywhere in this country, and you take a job somewhere, they find you. You don't have to sign up. They find you. They know who you are through your employer. It's called a locate module in child support enforcement. And I say we need that same mentality in election integrity so that, you know, it's easy to vote, easy for you to vote wherever you are, but you're only going to vote one time. And you're only going to vote where your current address is per law. And if you try to do it anywhere else, we're going to find you. And we're going to find you out. And then it's a criminal act for you to do that because everybody's vote is diluted when you get more than one vote. So I think 98% of the citizens of North Carolina and certainly around the country would agree that it should be one person, one vote, and that you should not be able to escape the government by cheating that way. Like you wouldn't be able to cheat on your paying your child support. Mm-hmm. We need that mentality. And I'm not sure if we can't correct ERIC and make it work effectively for all of the states that are involved, then we need another third party system or another opportunity to do it right through the information systems technology we have today.
Well, you know, that's something that I want to drill down on a little bit because of your IT background, I mean, you bring a very different perspective to solutions for all this. And look, I am not a tech person. I always tell people I can barely work my iPhone. But you look at these things, all of this, and you say there's a technology answer. So talk about what you think is that how do we get a technology answer for cleaning voter rolls? I mean, if we could get rid of even having to, for states to have to even join an organization, but to just have a product, it seems to me that that's a better use of the state tax dollars.
Sure. Okay, so everything starts with a business, and election integrity is a business. It may not be well-defined nationally, but it is a business. You're in the business of free and fair elections, and so am I. Every technical solution should be crafted around the business, not the other way around. So what I tell people, I said, you know, identify the business architecture, identify what you're trying to do. And we mentioned earlier the eight lanes of election mm-hmm. integrity.
Cleaning voter rolls is one of them.
That's right. And list maintenance is a huge part of that. Mm-hmm. In fact, it all starts with the list because that's the source of a lot of grief in the election mm-hmm. integrity business. So I tell everybody, we created our little card, Insight. And on the backside are your lanes of election integrity, your eight systems. And we start with those systems and we say, okay, let's decompose those systems like a good systems analyst, decompose them into all the tasks that need to be performed in order to assure a free and fair election. So we take each of those eight lanes. And I'll use the example of voter list maintenance as one. So we decompose that down into the tasks. You have to have a voter roll, you have voter history information, that's all publicly available. And then you have a national change of address information systems that are maintained by the Postal Service. And then there are other lists that you can get, commercial lists of commercial addresses. Most secretaries of state also maintain lists of all the businesses.
That's true. That's where businesses go to register.
That's right. So you can gather all of those publicly available or purchasable lists into a data warehouse. Referred to in the industry as a galactic data warehouse, where all of that is organized with proper data structures. And from there, you can spin off from there a data mart, which solves business problems, business challenges. And that's how we solve the list maintenance problem, because you can't do that with transactional processing or web information, web publishing. You do that with business intelligence and those types of solutions. So that's a back-end system that requires a data architect and an engineer to create the database, the massive database from which you create the solutions for answering the questions and making decisions in election integrity with respect to voter lists. Take another system. Let's talk about poll observers. Poll observers do an enormous amount of good by being in the election sites, whether it's early voting or it's on same day or election day, and they're analyzing or reviewing and inspecting and reporting on the activities that they see there, and they need to be trained. So there's two systems that support that. One of them is automated, or I should say video type training. It's on demand. They can get that from a website. When they have permission, they log in. They get training videos or training resources that they can learn from.
And what they're learning is, this is what the law says.
Right.
This is how the election is supposed to be conducted. And here are some
common things that you'll see at the polling site, which are not legal or not legitimate. And you need to call those out and report them. And then you need a system to report it. You need the web on-demand training opportunity, but then you need a system that where you transact the observations off a checklist or with narrative. You identify what happened in the polling site, and that's what we refer to as the bread and butter of election integrity. Our system is called SEERS, Statewide Election Integrity Reporting System, and that is the RNC does something similar with Zendesk, but that's a commercial off the shelf. It is. It's a help desk type of application,
right.
But ours is much more robust and interactive, because what we do with SEERS is we have the automatically when the person goes in, they log in, so you know that the precinct is being manned by a poll observer. And the war room for your organization now has lights up. They know that they've got an observer at that location. So all of your precincts now, if they got observers, the war room knows we're all manned and we have everybody there to watch. And then the reports come in. They watch the startup procedures in the morning and they make a report. Oh, they started up correctly, or they made this mistake. They didn't check the emergency bin for ballots or whatever. So everything that they're supposed to do off of a checklist, they report on. And then at the end of the day, if there's something really egregious that happens, or during the voting, they'll report that. And then the war room can immediately launch somebody on it, a lawyer or someone that can make a report to the Board of Elections for corrective action. And that needs to be transacted, because later you need all that information about what happened during the election.
And where.
And who saw it and what time of day it occurred. You need that for evidence, because you may end up in lawsuits, or you may end up needing to make statutory changes to make a better election experience.
And what was the resolution of it?
That's right.
Because that's the part is the great black hole.
And that's what observers want. They don't want to send into the black hole. They want their report to be handled by someone so they're not wasting their time. And then they want the interaction back and forth with the person that's going to resolve it. So if a lawyer is working on a problem to try to get that stopped, then they'll take up the case. They'll know who the lawyer is that's working on it, and then that lawyer will send information back to the observer saying, you know, we've gotten this for action, or we close this report out because the following things have been done. And so our system does that.
That, you know, I have to tell you, when I went to Georgia on behalf of the president after the 2020 election, and I got there in the wee hours of the morning after the day after the election, it was another day before I actually went to where they were having the war room and the hotline during the election at the state party headquarters. And they had all these incident reports, thousands, but they were all on paper. There was no way to, and so what, so people would look at them, but there wasn't any real system for reviewing them. And all of that, we had to do all of that manually. And then we had to try, once we decided what the different issues were for preparing the election contest, we had to then convert those to affidavits. And that was another huge challenge. And I just kept thinking, there has to be a better way to do this.
Well, there certainly is a better way. And anytime, if you can imagine automating a process, it can be done. If you can imagine it, that's the only limit that you have. We refer to front end, middle tier, and then back end. And the front end is the web. And a lot of things you can do through scheduling or publishing content, web content. That's our Insight web solution. And it's pretty well developed. And then there's a secure area that's for members only that are actually operatives of election integrity, nonpartisan. We have Democrats, Libertarians, we have everything.
I love that about Insight because one of the key people,
Lynn Bernstein,
from Wake County.
She's a Democrat.
She's one of our
top people.
She is fabulous.
I tell everybody, I said, look, we're nonpartisan and we want the best talent leading up our teams and our task force. And Lynn Bernstein is absolutely the best on machines and technology.
Yeah.
She knows what's right and what right looks like, and she tells everyone, and she's not bashful. She even challenges her own party when they do things incorrectly with that.
That's pretty fabulous. Yeah. And, you know, she's been badly treated by the Wake County Director of Elections, and I'm trying to figure out how we can do something about that. But you mentioned the machines. Let's talk about voting machines, because a lot of people have lost complete confidence in the voting machines. And we didn't include anything about that in our election contest in Georgia because we didn't have any experts and we didn't have any money to hire anybody. And there was no way to develop the evidence.
Well, that's a shame, too, because with the Dominion machines there, that's been a real problem.
So talk about... You're familiar with all the different kinds of voting systems that are used in North Carolina. And how do we get our, what's the technology solution for the problems with the voting machines?
Okay, well, you know, because I'm a technical guy, I really do believe in machines. I really do believe in automating whatever process can be done, but I also believe in accountability and audit and inspection. Those are very important. And we don't have, unfortunately in North Carolina, we don't have the same level of emphasis on inspecting the machines and having them accountable. I know right now there's an attempt being made to try to limit the source code review.
What that is.
Well, machines run on software, and the software, in most cases, in most enterprise level systems, there's millions of lines of code that support that. Computer code that's been written that causes the machine to behave the way it does. And thankfully, North Carolina's got some pretty good statutes about escrowing that source code so that it's available. It's not commercially inspectable, but it is available. So, you know, if a state's going to license the thing to run, then it's subject to review by experts that can look at it and say, you know, this is corrupt software, this isn't going to work right. So we have rules in the state that say you have to escrow your source code. It's subject to inspection.
And so now, what does that mean?
That means that it's maintained by a third-party repository.
Okay.
The latest
software. It's
not
the vendor.
It's not the vendor. It's not the state.
But it's a
certified storage location that on demand the state can say we're going to have experts look at your source code. If you're going to run it in our state, you're going to have to. It's got to be inspectable. And the Board of Elections is trying to limit the amount of opportunities that we have or the number of people that can look at source code.
Now, why would they be doing that? Who's behind that?
It's an empire. It's a mentality that says we know better than the people how to run an election, and we don't need the vulnerability, though it's limited. We don't need the vulnerability of someone possibly compromising that vendor's source code. So we're going to limit the amount of times, the number of machines it can be looked at on, and that sort of thing. It's ridiculous because we have, like I say, we have Health and Human Services systems, enterprise class, millions of lines of code, our Medicaid system, Medicare. We have
all these
social services systems. They're all subject to the same rules. They're all very sensitive, and you don't want any of them compromised. The vendors all have a commercial interest, and I don't know that there's ever been a case of it being compromised, but. This is the board just trying to use its will and trying to limit what we're able to do. And you know, I think the citizens are going to fight back. They're going to say, no, we don't want any limitations put on when we can look at that source code as long as it's safe and secure, non-disclosure agreements are signed, and it's true subject matter experts looking at the source code. There should be no reason. The vendor doesn't have, if the vendor has a problem with that, then the vendor doesn't have to run his software in the state. He can go somewhere else.
Well, that's the thing that I always worry about, is that these vendors for the voting machines, there aren't that many companies. I mean, it's a very small group of people who are small group of companies that that actually build and operate these voting systems. And they seem to be completely solid. They have solidarity on one thing, and that is to keep the citizens from knowing what's going on. To the point, I think that a lot of election officials let the vendors run everything for them.
Well, they don't know that. Very few election boards have the depth of experience in IT to know what they're even looking at. If the machine seems to behave properly in the conditions that they've established for a voting environment, then they trust that the vendor's doing things right. When they invest millions of dollars into voting machines, they want to believe that vendor's got their best interest at heart. And citizens don't trust that. The citizens don't trust that because they've seen examples like Georgia with the Dominion machines. That's a problem. And it could have been human error along the way somewhere. It could have been corruption. But they'll get to the bottom of it at some point. But you don't want to think that any election is ever going to be compromised because of a deficiency in the machine or the software that's running on the machine. And that's why people like Lynn Bernstein are so important, because they know what to look for. They know how to challenge a machine that's running old software that hasn't been updated. They're great at auditing that process and making sure that the counties are doing things by the book.
We're going to have to come up with some standards, and they need to be in the statutes that provide for transparency and accountability.
Yeah, there's two things that are missing right now. One, and not every state and not every county within every state has a paper ballot. And I would argue that as we're learning from experience, that you need a paper ballot. You need a ballot where you can actually look to see whether it was produced by the machine or it was filled in the blanks, but with your pen. You can see the ballot that's going to get scanned into that machine. That builds voter confidence, that paper ballot.
Without a QR code.
Without a QR code, without any other special information on there. You need to know that your ballot was filled out properly and it scanned into that machine, into the tabulator. Okay, so that's the first thing, paper ballot. Not every county has it. Not every state has it. Mm-hmm. But you need a paper ballot. Because then it leads to audit. And that's the second part. You need the ability to audit. The teeth need to be there for these general assemblies to order an audit if they suspect any wrongdoing.
See, I actually think that there need to be routine audits that are mandatory under the statute. Everybody gets audited.
Well, they have, and for many years, they've sufficed with what they call a risk-limiting audit, isn't an audit.
That's not an audit. That's a pretend audit.
It is. Well, but see, the general assemblies write the rules. They don't know the difference.
Well, the left came up with that idea. Yeah. Did you know that? That was a left-wing professor, I think, from Oregon.
Yeah. So these risk-limiting audits really aren't eliminating any risk, and they're really not an audit. So
that's
really a misnomer.
Again, it's Orwellian language.
Anybody can understand that if you have a paper ballot, it's an item that could be subject to audit, okay? And then if you have what I refer to as an accompanying document or a transmittal document, and that is either the authorization to vote, like we have in North Carolina, ATV, or a ballot envelope that the ballot was delivered in if it's an absentee ballot. If you have one of those items, then when the ballot went in the machine, you still have that other artifact. You can then go back. If someone says, well, they dropped a bunch of fake ballots in there and scanned them through the machines. Well, you could discover that if you had an authorization to vote or a ballot envelope for the ballot when it came in. You could match them up later on. In a true audit, you'd be able to match those up. And then you would know if someone dropped a bunch of extra ballots in there or if the machine count's not correct. Mm-hmm. You would be able to determine that. So you need that capacity to do that. And you need that for voter confidence. If nothing else, you just need it so that people understand when I go to vote, my vote's going to count. And if someone cheated, they're going to get caught. That's what you want. You want to build that voter confidence. Right now, you don't have that. Anywhere in the country, you don't have that.
No. Well, I can certainly understand why there's not confidence. But let me give you two examples. There's a woman, Heather Honey, who is someone who does investigations. That's what she does for a living, what she calls open source investigations. And she lives in Pennsylvania, and it's interesting how she got into this, because she went to vote in 2020 and stood in line and got to talk, and there's a couple ahead of her in line. And when they got up there to vote, the person checking them in says, oh, Mrs. Smith, or whatever her name is, this says you've already voted. Now, we heard that all over the country in 2020. That was a new one. I still can't figure out how they did that. But so she started doing investigations and following the trail. And this one data point, they investigated the Pennsylvania election, she and her partner, and they came up with, they analyzed the fact that there are, for the 2020 election, statewide in Pennsylvania, there are 121,000 more ballots that were cast and counted and included in the certified totals than there are voters who could be accounted for as having checked in or cast an absentee ballot. And so, and they did the research in Michigan as well, and determined that there are just over 100,000. There's a delta, just over 100,000 more ballots than voters. And one of the things that she said is that before they changed the law in Pennsylvania in Act 77, which was a terrible law, Pennsylvania went from having one of the best laws, you couldn't vote by absentee and by mail unless you had one of these four or five criteria. Anyway, but it used to be that the law in Pennsylvania was that every precinct had to balance. Before it went to the county, every precinct voting location, they had to balance, and they had to, the number of ballots and votes cast had to match the number of voters. And that was done away with in Act 77. And now it's supposed to be done at the county level, but there, how do you do it? You have to start at the basics in order for you to be able to balance.
In North Carolina, we balance. We do. We have that rule. And I remember talking to one of my chief judges after this last primary election. He was telling me, man, we were one ballot off and we had to go back and do it all over again, check everything again. He said we had to be in balance before we reported from the precinct up to the county.
That's fantastic.
So, and that builds confidence that you know that they've already balanced at the precinct level. So if later on a mistake occurs, then you know it's somewhere between the precinct and the state. You need to be able to discover where the problem occurred. And balancing down at the precinct level is very important.
Yeah, you have to start with those building blocks. But you know, the voting machines, we just had a situation that was reported to our sort of national group of people that talk about this on a weekly basis. From Georgia, went from DeKalb County in their primary election, where, and I think that what happened, because apparently this happened in several places, where you had a candidate who withdrew, and somehow the machines couldn't accommodate that.
Yeah.
And so you had a woman who's a Democrat running for county commissioner in DeKalb County, and when she started looking at the election returns, her precinct showed that she had zero votes. She said, well, I know that I voted for myself, and my husband voted for me, so at least I got two votes. So she went in and presented all this, and they ended up, they first had to do the machine count, and it showed her losing in third place because the top two go to a runoff and one had dropped out. And it showed her in third place. And then when they did the hand count, a manual hand count of the paper ballots, because they had those, like you say, she went from third place to first place.
Yep.
Now, you know, now the citizens group asked the county election board to, you know, you better check some of these other races. You know, just even though you don't have a complaint, you better check them and just make sure. But they wouldn't do that. But I don't know how you have confidence unless you take steps to do those additional things. And they wouldn't do it. But that is why it matters to have citizens there overseeing and finding out what's going on.
Yeah, and if you want to quell all of the conspiracy theories around the country, then you better be a little more transparent with the machines and how things are done. You know, we had, for example, this last year, one of the problems in North Carolina is they limit the amount of training you can do and what you can use for the training. It's very...
You mean having access to the equipment?
Having access to the equipment for training. We were given, the Assistant General Counsel for the State Board of Elections denied us the opportunity to have supervised training on a machine. So we could train thousands.
Just
we didn't even need to touch the machine. We just wanted to be able to scan ballots in, show people how it's supposed to be done. And the state board says, no, we're not going to let you have access to these machines for training. And then my judges that I appointed in my county were coming back to me and saying, well, you know, I'm not really that familiar with the machines, even the training I got.
Yeah.
So, and now they're experimenting down at the election site on election day because they don't get a complete dry run. They're experimenting. They're learning as they go about how to use these sophisticated machines. It's insane. Nobody runs a business by not letting anyone get near the equipment that produces the outcome for their business. It's just it's counterintuitive.
Well, you know, one of the things that there's this organization, left-wing organization, the Center for Tech and Civic Life.
Oh, yeah.
And they organize that entity, 501c3, charitable educational, and their whole purpose was to build relationships with the local election offices by coming in and saying, we'll train you. We'll teach you about technology. And so you don't have to worry about that because we're here to help you. Because you're not getting it from anybody else, we're going to help you. And they literally befriended all these election officials all over the country. So guess who Mark Zuckerberg picked to give his $360 million in 2020?
Which
was the CTCL.
Yeah, 92% of all those grants went to left-leaning entities or Democrat-controlled establishments around or jurisdictions around the country.
Right.
It wasn't balanced.
It wasn't. And anybody that says that it is probably, on Facebook's payroll. But it is interesting. They have so many entities. And the thing I keep saying to people is we're never going to have as much money. We're never, us being conservatives, we're never going to have the number of entities. But what we have are citizens. And if people will get involved and get engaged, and what we're trying to do, what you're trying to do, is educate people, and then let's come up with solutions to these problems. Because these problems are real, and they are everywhere.
Well, and it's palpable. The citizen activism is on the rise. A lot of folks are very, when they see the examples that are brought out in movies like Rigged and 2000 Mules, and some of these interviews with Engelbrecht and Phillips, there's no shortage of documentaries now that we've had time to gather what happened. The one thing I think that's a complication is the fact that people confuse anomalies and observations with evidence.
That's right.
And that's a real problem.
As a lawyer, you can
understand that evidence is clear and concrete and it's irrefutable. Evidence is when, not what you saw in 2000 Mules with somebody illegally dropping ballots into the box. Evidence is when you go then do the forensics and later on you find out where those ballots came from and if any of them were fraudulently produced and knowing down to the day, time, group, where it happened, who did it, what organization was involved, and then present that. That's evidence because that you can take to court.
Well, and that's what we did in Georgia. I mean, basically, and I was managing the post-election effort in Georgia, and I said, look, I'm an election lawyer, so I know you can't go to court and say, well this was unfair. You know, only the left can come in and get laws changed by saying it's unfair. We have to actually follow the law.
Right.
But we did. I said, we have to have specific instances of wrongdoing or a violation of the election code. So that was our rule. Nothing goes into this complaint that doesn't have an affidavit of a fact witness signing a penalty of perjury. I saw this or this happened to me. Or an expert witness relying on publicly available government data. And that's all that went into that lawsuit. And we filed a 64-page complaint with over 1,100 pages of exhibits and affidavits, and then we never got a judge appointed to hear the case.
Yeah.
So, I mean, don't get me started on the judiciary. But you're right, and people would say to me, well, why didn't you include this or why didn't you include that? I would say, there's a difference between allegations and evidence. And I knew that we were going to have to be able, assuming, silly me, that once we filed it, we would have an immediate expedited hearing. But I do think that we have to understand the difference between allegations and theories.
The other problem is the left is very good at using your own rhetoric against you.
Yeah.
So if you make an allegation that the election was stolen in 2020, that an election was stolen, then you don't have evidence to back it up, they write you off as a conspiracy theorist, and then they discredit everything else you did, whether it was right or wrong. And that's a problem, because we have a PR battle we're also fighting as a business. We need people to think we're credible, and that when we produce information in support of a claim that we make, that it's true evidence, that we can back it up, and that it would stand up in a court of law. And we won't always win, but we'll always be right. And that's what you really want here, is you want right, and you want the citizens to have confidence that we're gonna fight to make the truth come forward.
Well, we've got a lot of work to do. I just tell people, we're not going to fix it overnight. The left has invested, my estimation, I've been tracking their money in this field for several years, and we're going to have a presentation. We're at the North Carolina Statewide Election Integrity Summit, getting ready to start, and we will have a speaker from the Capital Research Center, and Kristen Eastlick is, and they have really done wonderful research. I was so happy when they started doing this research, because I'd been pulling it together from my own little research, following what they were doing. So now this is wonderful to have a place to go to, Influence Watch, where they document all this. But so I can just go there. But I estimate that they have probably pumped at least $2 billion into this effort for the last decade. And that includes the nearly half billion from Zuckerberg. But he's not the only one. Soros, you know, gave the money to start Eric. There's the billionaire Pierre Omidyar, one of the eBay billionaires. He started this thing called the Democracy Fund, and that was what, you know, he put at least that we know of $250 million of his own money, in 2011, to start up a lot of these left-wing election entities that now, you know, support, and they built an infrastructure to support what I'm starting to call unobserved voting. I think
which is a really good term. It's so fraught with potential for fraud that unobserved voting is a major problem, and the states really need to relook that. Now the federal government's moving in that direction to have more of that.
The left wants that.
Need to stand up and say no. This no excuse voting or this ballot harvesting operation. It's fraught with problems, and we need to have a reason code for why someone needs an absentee ballot. They need a reason code, and it needs to be enforced, because we can still make it easy to vote, whether it's before the election or on election day, but they need a reason to not be able to go to the polls.
I think that's right. South Carolina did that. They substituted, they got rid of all their no excuse absentee voting and made it very strict as to what the, actually, there's one thing in there. If you're over 65, you can qualify for an absentee ballot. I don't think that should be. I think you have to have, you should have to be infirmed, but they did get rid of, at least they have a list of, you have to have excuses. Louisiana has that.
But we used to have it.
Yeah.
We just don't.
Most states used to have it. Yeah. You didn't have, 45 days of early voting like
Virginia.
Like Virginia does. But Jim, I just want to tell you that you've served your country as in the Army, and you've been a real patriot, and you are still serving your country, because I do believe that this is the fundamental basis of our country and of our republic. This is not a democracy, it's a republic.
Right.
When everybody says, we're gonna save our democracy, you know they're not talking our language.
We have democratic principles, but we are a republic.
That's right.
Constitutional republic.
So I want to thank you on behalf of millions of people for all of your hard work and for what you're giving of yourself and your time and your talents, your vast knowledge. And I am absolutely convinced that we are going to come up with technological, I'm not, you are, but I'm going to help you do it, the technology solutions to really address and fix the problems of the voting systems in America. And we've got a big battle ahead of us, but I'm really very grateful for all that you do.
Well, thank you for all you do, Cleta, because without your inspiration, guys like me wouldn't know where to start. So,
well, I thank you for being my partner in this. So, and with that, thank you all so much for joining us. We hope that you will share this episode of Who's Counting. Tell your friends, visit our website, www.whoscounting.us, and get involved, get engaged, download the Citizen's Guide to Building an Election Integrity Infrastructure, start a local task force in your county, in your municipality, because unless we as citizens get involved, we can't stop the bad guys from doing harm to our election system. And with that, we say goodbye and thank you, and we'll see you again next time. Thank you for listening to Who's Counting. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Conservative Partnership Institute's Election Integrity Network. It is filmed and recorded at CPI Studios in Washington, D.C. Help us grow this show by sharing this episode with a friend, and be sure to subscribe and to give us a good review. We need your word of mouth, because big tech can't be trusted and tries to cancel us daily. Help fight back by visiting whoscounting.us and sign up for this podcast, for our newsletter, become part of the Election Integrity Network.